You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This week, most fast food workers across the state received a bump in minimum wage. A state law first signed by Governor Gavin Newsom in 2022 raised the fast food minimum wage to $20 an hour. But the law's journey has been far from smooth sailing. The fast food industry came out in strong opposition to the law and even qualified a ballot referendum about it. Franchisees have warned that they might be forced to raise prices, even as some owners are still trying to figure out if the law applies to them. And controversies have emerged around the use of non-disclosure agreements during negotiations and alleged exceptions to the wage hike for certain restaurants, including some with ties to a major backer of the governor. There's a lot to break down. So joining us with more on the law's timeline, as well as the surrounding scrutiny, is Ashley Savala, the Capitol correspondent for KCRA. Good afternoon. Hey, Ashley.
Good afternoon. So great to see you.
You know, I had to do a refresher with this law because it definitely has had a journey since 2021 when it moved through the Capitol and then it was signed into law. So let's just start off with some background. Mm-hmm. When and why was this law created?
Yeah, so this law was first introduced in 2021 by a woman, Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, who was seen as an absolute labor warrior in the Capitol. And that's what she has been known for. She's known for AB5, which reclassified a lot of independent workers, which was another controversial measure. And labor, I know, and she wanted to push this fast food council and this group that would begin bargaining the wages and working conditions for fast food workers. That was the primary concept of the bill that she introduced in 2021.
Hmm. So if fast food workers, as of this week, are bumped up to $20 an hour, if I'm correct, California's minimum wage is $16 an hour for other jobs. So why do fast food workers specifically get a higher minimum wage of $20?
And that's still the question, I would say, for many. I've received emails just within the last few weeks from people who work in, you know, some other jobs that are, some might say, are fundamental to the structure of just our society. For example, those who work in foster care, those who work maybe in health care, some who might be making less than $20 an hour at this point, maybe not minimum wage, but less than 20. So that's been the question, why $20 an hour? But at, I think the root of the proposal behind all of this is that fast food workers were claiming that they were being mistreated by their employers. At least that's sort of the messaging that the powerful labor group behind this, SEIU, has been saying, is that there's a lot of violations that have gone ignored by some franchisees or some operators of these fast food restaurants, whether that's the working conditions in the heat, wage theft, things that are already against state law, but they wanted, I think, extra attention on this issue to just note that so many of the people in this industry, they're women, they are, you know, they're migrants from other countries, they don't know their rights. And so it was just a way to give them a little more muscle in their own industry.
I know that legislation can change a lot, you know, as it makes its way to a law. Mm-hmm. So the governor signed this into law 2022. We're now in 2024. How did that law in 2022, has it changed, or is it essentially the same as it was 2 years ago?
It's complicated. And actually the passage of it in 2022 was really the kickoff to sort of where we are now. So in 2022, immediately after the governor signed it, and I will note it did pass by the absolute bare minimum of votes that it could have from the legislature, because people did have a lot of questions about, you know, this proposal. So the governor signed it, and from there, that immediately motivated the fast food industry as a whole, from franchisees to operators, everyone within that realm, to launch a referendum against it. And that was easy for them. There's a lot of money behind, you know, within these corporations, especially when you're talking about McDonald's corporate, Starbucks corporate, Chipotle corporate. And they got the signatures, they qualified it for the ballot, and they raised, I mean, $71.8 million to, you know, prepare for basically a battle. But from there, though, the state had its own strategy to sort of get under their skin, for lack of a better term. And that was by, you know, coming up with some proposals to resurrect an industrial welfare commission that could regulate the industry anyway, even with it being placed on hold with a referendum. But ultimately, what happened was in 2023, Assemblyman Chris Holden introduced AB 1228, which was going to require these major corporations, McDonald's, Starbucks, Chipotle, whoever, to share the liability of those workplace violations that were at the forefront of the messaging behind the need for this law, to share the liability with their operators, the middlemen, you know, the business owners, the franchisees. And that's, I think that that appeared to have scared them enough to at least want to attempt to go to a negotiating table. And that's how we ended up where we are today. Mm. That joint liability, that was tossed out the window, and that's ultimately what those corporations wanted. But they basically said, okay, yes, we will go along with the $20 minimum wage, and we will go ahead and allow the Fast Food Council to be created. But as, you know, we've reported, the franchisees were left out of all of this discussion.
Okay, so there's a lot of parties that were involved, or powerful parties involved in these negotiations. You have unions, you have the fast food industry, you also have lawmakers. There was a piece that I wonder if this is a common use of practice when negotiating legislation. There was the use of NDAs, which are non-disclosure agreements. How did those, or what was the reasoning to have that? And is that common in legislation and bills?
So the reason why even the existence of the NDAs being used in the crafting of this law is that, you know, in our digging behind one of the exemptions in this law for bakeries who sell and bake their own bread and sell it as a standalone menu item, it was brought to my attention that NDAs were used. And I, you know, and a lot of, I've heard this a lot, people saying, well, you know, is that not common? Is that common? And when I tested the waters before we reported this, the overwhelming reaction was, what? No, absolutely not. And that was also in the process when we were trying to figure out who exactly was directing the use of the NDAs, who was requiring them. And there was discussion about the governor's office. The governor's office was adamant they did not direct, you know, anyone in the office did not sign the NDAs. They did not direct anyone to do so. And so then, my labor sources and then eventually the SEIU did come out and admit that they were the ones that required them. And no, they are not, from who I've spoken to, no, they're not normal.
So when it comes to the SEIU, when they responded to you, what was their reason for doing it?
That they were trying to find a way to bridge trust between two groups who clearly had a lot of emotions and tension and a lot of money at risk, based on how they could move if they did not come to some sort of agreement on this law. And they wanted to build trust. They felt like this piece of legislation was so important that they wanted to. But the SEIU, I will say, in my continued conversations with them, is that this is something that they do normally in high-stakes negotiations, and especially in labor situations, in bargaining situations, that NDAs are used to bridge trust between their industry opponents who might not like what it is that they're trying to do.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with KCRA Capital correspondent Ashley Savala about California's new fast food minimum wage law, which increased pay to $20 an hour. So we got the timeline, the bumpy history over the past, you know, year and a half, give or take. Now that the law is in effect, it doesn't apply to everyone. What businesses does this law apply to? Do we have a clear idea as of today, 2 days since the law took effect?
So there are there's two separate, I'm just going to call them sets or categories of exemptions. So there was a recent piece of legislation that actually was just signed by the governor, went to effect immediately, to exempt a variety of restaurants that are located in, for example, hotels, airports, convention centers, college campuses, museums, theme parks, arenas, etc. Though that legislation, as we've reported, was actually a cleanup bill, because as my sources have told me on the labor side of the negotiations, that the SEIU actually, with its use of NDAs, left out the other labor organizations that already have fast food workers under collective bargaining agreements. I've been told that the SEIU actually told those labor groups, well, the fast food industry made us sign the NDA, so we can't really tell you anything that's going on. Now, the SEIU, in some of my talks, claims to deny it. But overall, those groups were left out. And because this legislation, the original law that, you know, the governor passed and that's in effect now, that was the language of it was put out publicly on 9/11, September 11th of last year, which was the third to last day of the legislative session. So it's too late for those labor groups that already had those agreements to get in the mix. Anyway, they got their exemption. And we have an explanation behind those exemptions. The explanation we still do not have to this day is the one that is for bakeries who sell their bread as a standalone menu item and produce it on site. That, and as I've independently verified this, I know Bloomberg was the first to report it, but that exemption was specifically influenced by Greg Flynn and Panera Bread, and Greg Flynn's relationship with Governor Newsom. Now, I've been told that the governor pushed for that exemption for Panera, but in terms of, you know, Greg Flynn has come out and said, I'm going to pay my workers $20 an hour, but he has not said if he plans to follow the law, which is beyond just $20 an hour this year. It's increased its pay increases for the next several years, every year, as well as working conditions that the Fast Food Council will set until 2029. We've also reached out to Panera Bread, just the corporation, and they've just gone dead silent on this.
So if you are a mom and pop burger joint, you have like five locations. Does this affect you, or is this law meant for, you know, larger franchises?
Yeah, it's meant for the giant chains, those that have at least 60 locations nationally. So that's McDonald's. It's not any local, or I know we get caught up in small business versus local business. Businesses that are independent, they have no franchise or licensing or branding, they're not impacted by this. It's McDonald's, it's Burger King, it's Taco Bell.
Some would argue, though, that they would be impacted because if a McDonald's, per se, has to pay $20 an hour and they're up the street and they're a local or community burger joint, mom and pop, wouldn't they need to be competitive to get staff?
Absolutely. It's really expected to impact the economy as a whole. I think there are a lot of industries, and quite frankly, even some in the news industry, who might not be making $20 an hour.
I
think there are many industries that don't have workers making $20 an hour or more. And so I think this will certainly have an impact on the competitiveness of wages. I know some economists have said that this could artificially just raise the minimum wage overall across California. But again, it's putting it onto one industry has been really what's been controversial here.
Yeah. When I first started in news, the El Pollo Loco up the street offered a higher hourly wage, which is not something to laugh about, but it was a reality.
Yeah.
It is still a reality, actually. Okay, so the restaurant industry, some of the arguments have been, fast food industry has argued, oh, we're just going to have to raise prices. I mean, is that really true? Is that really a justifiable consequence of having this law? Because there are other counties and cities, they have higher minimum wages than $20 an hour,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think from who I've spoken to, I think it depends on the location. We know that there are minimum wage in certain local jurisdictions that are maybe just a dollar less than $20 an hour, or $1.25 less than $20 an hour. But I think for the areas in rural parts of the state, that's where I've heard that they're not just price increases, but closures of restaurants, because it just to some franchisees, it feels unsustainable to have to pay someone $20 an hour, which could actually be one of the highest wages in that area, potentially. That's the stance of the franchisees. And that, I know that's been pretty much across the board, from Jack in the Box to McDonald's to Starbucks, saying that, yeah, we'll just pass this on to the customers.
Hmm. What has Governor Newsom said since? I know you saw him at the snow survey yesterday. I don't know if he talked about that, but I do know during the Q&A, there were other questions, you know, not related to snowpack in the Sierra, because it can be rare when you get when you can get the governor in person to respond to questions. You've also seen him at the state capitol. Yeah. What has he said about this law? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there were a lot of challenges, controversy surrounding it.
Yeah. And so the governor has really doubled down on this Panera exemption not applying to Panera Bread. And he claims that it's actually Panera Bread is not exempt. And he had the governor's office attorneys look at the law, and they came back after Bloomberg's reporting and said, nope, yeah, because Panera Bread mixes its own bread off site and then it's just baked on site to match with that word produce. He claims that Panera falls under the law. And again, like I said, Panera isn't saying yes or no right at this point. But that's mainly been the extent of it. Again, with his office on the use of non-disclosure agreements, I have repeatedly asked, was the office at the very least aware that they were being used? And is the office okay with non-disclosure agreements being used in legislative negotiations, essentially? And I can't get an answer to either one of those questions, even though legislative leaders on the Senate and the Assembly have both weighed in, basically saying, A, either NDAs are not needed, or B, I had no idea NDAs were even a thing.
And I think it's important to also mention these are different branches, right? Like,
yes,
you have the governor's office, the executive branch, you have the legislative branch, but they do also at times, they influence each other as well, which is why I asked what the governor has said in response
exactly,
to
this. Exactly, but they're also supposed to keep each other in check. And one issue with this whole situation is that, and that we should notice that the governor's office led the negotiations. They provided the venue for the negotiations. They brought the parties together. And Assemblyman Chris Holden, who is the Democratic lawmaker who authored the law, forever has been claiming the ownership of it and was proud of it. But then finally, when it came time to talk about this Panera exemption, he said, well, I wasn't in those final negotiations, so I have no idea. And I asked him, how is that possible when you carried the law? And that's sort of been his stance since then. So the legislature really didn't have a seat at the table either. And what the NDAs covered, we have no idea. If it was meant to leave them out, we have no idea.
Well, it is also more for you to follow, Ashley.
Mm-hmm.
thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Ashley Zavala is the Capitol correspondent for KCRA, breaking down the timeline and the controversies surrounding California's new fast food minimum wage law, which raised wages to $20 an hour as of Monday, April 1st. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.